Nearby Business on 90.3 Near FM with Declan Ralph and Dave Daly.
Hi there and welcome to the programme. I'm Declan Ralph.
And I'm Dave Daly.
Coming up on the programme today, in a moment myself and Dave will be discussing some recent business headlines from the local and national papers. Then it's the business of section. This week it's the business of experiential tourism. And shortly Cormac O'Donoghue will be along to chat to Dave about Experience Gaelic Games that's located locally down the road in Athena on Moby Road.
This week for Nearby Business on the Road, Brian Green visited two businesses in Merino. He chatted with Thomas in City Cycles and Deirdre in Quack and Dirk.
And then for the remainder of the programme, we're going to focus on Brexit. There's been a lot of talk here in Ireland and on, right on both sides of the border, in fact, across the water as well in the UK and in Brussels too. What is the most likely outcome of the deliberations and discussions? Who will gain and who will lose out? Former Taoiseach, former leader of the Fianna Fáil party and local resident Bertie Ahern will be here to chat through the implications for Ireland and also how it will affect local business in the area. That's coming up after 6:30.
Now, if you would like to get involved in the discussion or the comments or get comments here tonight on anything we are talking about, you can contact the show by text while we are on the air at 087-69-44-500 or any time on Twitter at @nearby_business. #localbiz.
Nearby Business on 90.3 Near FM with Declan Ralph and Dave Daly.
Okay, Dave, we're going to have a look at some of those headlines from local and national papers. And the first story you have is about Microsoft. They've opened a new campus in Dublin.
They have, and Liv Rackar has officially opened the Microsoft's new 134 million campus in South Dublin today. The 34,000 square metre purpose-built building is now home to the company's 2,000 strong Irish workforce. And they have named the street after themselves. It's on One Microsoft Place in Leopardstown, and it took 3 years to construct, and I have to say I was involved in some way in the technical side of that myself, which I'm very proud of. Microsoft's Managing Director in Ireland, Katrina Hallinan, said the building is the physical manifestation of the cultural transformation that the company has been going through in recent years. Really since Satya Nadella took over as CEO of the company and redefined our mission, which is to empower every individual and organisation on the planet to achieve more, she said. What we are doing in this building is bringing all of the teams together, whether it's engineering, operations or digital sales, and helping them to innovate in this new culture of One Microsoft. Ms. Hallinan said it was a demonstration of Microsoft's commitment to Ireland for the long haul, and they said they celebrated 33 years in Ireland this year. I think it's this building epitomizes the future of Microsoft, and it's opening our doors to our customers, the community, to have an impact on society as a whole. And it is a beautiful building. And I was just saying to you earlier on, there's a virtual waterfall which comes down through three glass shelves, and it spills out onto the floor. It's all done virtually, so you look like you're walking in water. And this is actually happening via projectors and imagery, which is quite amazing. Brilliant. There's a couple of coffee shops, there's a pizzeria, and there's a yoga room which the light fills in the morning when it opens, and it's just a good place to work. And if you watch the racing on RTE or Channel 4 in Leopardstown, you occasionally see it just on the last bend. It's a very imposing building, very nice building too.
Excellent. Well, good news for Dublin. Also, some more good news a little closer to us here in Coolock. There are 60 new jobs were announced recently at Dublin Airport.
Yeah, the new Donata facility will provide high quality catering to airlines focusing on premium long-haul carriers. The company is part of the Emirates Group and can supply up to 4,000 meals daily at the current capacity. The new jobs include chefs, operation managers, logistics and so on. Globally, Donata prepares meals every day for more than 190 airlines and has been awarded Best Caterer by some of the world's leading airlines. Passenger traffic at Dublin Airport is up year on year since 2011, and it's just a matter of time before it reaches 30 million mark, said Gary Chapman, president of Donata. And then this is important to us. In Dublin, we've identified a really strong opportunity to provide a growing number of long-haul carriers and their customers with great-tasting, high-quality in-flight meals. We see this as a real vote of confidence in the Irish market, and we will support further by sourcing local food producers and suppliers. He said, Dublin Airport Managing Director, this is Vincent Harrison, said Donata's arrival at the airport was a positive addition, not only to Dublin's community, but also to the Irish Irish economy. Dublin Airport is a major economic hub, supporting and facilitating 120,000 jobs. Airport service providers of Donata's calibre can really help to support our wider airport operations. We welcome the company that will inject some healthy competition into the market, and we're looking forward to working with the team at Donata. The most recent full financial year figures at 2016-17 with Donata's most profitable in its 58-year history. So jobs and food at Dublin Airport, and the local suppliers will benefit from that one too. Declan's great stuff.
Fantastic. Okay, it's time for this now.
The business of on Nearby Business on 90.3 Near FM.
Okay, during the week there, I went down to Nafina and I visited Cormac O'Donoghue. This evening's business of slot, where you visited a firm which made a successful business from our national sport. Experience Gaelic Games was set up in 2009 by husband and wife Cormac O'Donoghue and Georgina Carragher. In Ireland, our Gaelic Games and dance are part of what we are and what we do. At Experience Gaelic Games, you can get an opportunity to experience this unique aspect of Ireland for yourself. This company offers visitors and other groups a chance to take part in Gaelic Games, dance, and hear about other aspects of our Gaelic heritage. They've recently hosted groups as diverse as a group of altar servers from the Vatican and a soccer team from abroad.
My name is Cormac O'Donoghue, and along with my wife Georgina Carragher, we're co-founders of a concept called Experience Gaelic Games. We're solely focused on introducing inbound international visitors to Irish culture via the medium of the unique cultural concept of Gaelic Games. So what we do is we take international visitors into the heart of our local community, into one of the 2,200 Gaelic clubs that exist here on the island, and we explain the uniqueness of the values expressed through the playing and the engagement with the GAA throughout the country. The main focus of the activity is soft adventure activity. So for people to actually get out and try and play the game, learn the basic skills of the ancient games of hurling, learn the skills of Gaelic football and Gaelic handball. So really it's just it's an opportunity to have fun. It's the original corporate team building activity that's been exists here on the island for over 3,000 years. And it's pretty stimulating for across a range of sectors, from the what we call the FIT, the Free Independent Traveller section, all the way through to corporate incentives, to schools and colleges, and to a whole range of international visitors. Really, it provides a unique insight into the Irish psyche, into Irish culture, and it also happens to be, more importantly, just great fun.
When did you start the business?
We started in our first trial run was in 2009, when we had the pleasure of taking out the international Fijian rugby team and introducing the Sean O'Halpin and playing a little bit of hurling with them. So from 2009 was our first focus groups and our first test sessions, and we've been working on honing the concept ever since.
So you're running this as a full-time business now. So you said inbound, so people travelling from other countries and also indigenous population through companies and so on will engage you for an afternoon or a morning, and you'll teach them the basic skills and they have a bit of fun.
Yeah, primarily it's based on the inbound international market, because, again, I suppose introducing GAA to Irish people is somewhat already done for anybody who lives here on the island. It's impossible to avoid the pervasiveness of Gaelic games and Irish culture, and not just the games themselves, but the cultural context of them. So while we do deal with some indigenous businesses, those indigenous businesses that we deal with are normally our multinational businesses. A lot of our IT businesses, we work quite closely with all the range of high-tech businesses based here in Dublin who have some international divisions. They'll come and spend the afternoon with us with an introduction and a background to both the playing of the games, but more importantly, we for all of our sessions, we'd be very passionate about taking the time to paint the cultural context of where they've come from, how they express the innate bit of our indigenous culture, and how remarkably the Gaelic Athletic Association is probably the most remarkable and most successful cultural indigenous movement for the protection and for the promotion of indigenous games and cultural pastimes.
On the business side of things then, you have other locations around Ireland that are in partnership with you?
Yeah, we're based in our permanent base is in Dublin, is and based in the Fianna GAA Club in Mulvey Road in Glasnevin, and but we work in a range of clubs throughout the country, but we particularly work on a permanent basis in Galway in Liam Mellows GAA Club, beautifully on the directly on the shores of beautiful Galway Bay, and we work in the Pearsig in Cork. And Nave Galls in Belfast. So, along with providing the service in a number of locations, a lot of our visitors are very culturally curious but time poor in their itinerary here. So, we quite often provide the activity in on site in hotels, the likes of the K Club, Druids Glen, Farmley Estate, and indeed many, many other locations throughout the country which you work in partnership with. But I suppose we would be very passionate about. The delivery of the product, and that it's always delivered in the cultural context. So all of our sessions start and commence with an introduction and overview to the games, and their importance in modern Irish life, as well as their historical context on the island, and then followed by the activity itself, which is really a team building soft adventure activity. And again, the delivery of the product is based around fun and safety of our clients and safety of our groups. Each individual group, like each individual training session, is always unique and bespoke depending upon the ability, agility, and makeup of each individual group.
Okay, just in terms of the people you employ, so you have a number of people employed, you have coaches, you have administration, so you do have an actual industry in this.
Absolutely, yeah. We employ a range of part-time coaches who work with us, and we have two full-time staff. So yeah, so it's like everything else, like all businesses, it requires a sustainable background and infrastructure to it. So while we're passionate about it, and the reason we engage in the primary region we engage in is to, in some ways, to indulge that passion and spread the Gaelic gospel, as we'd say. But also a very clear understanding that if this concept is to be successful, then it has to be financially sustainable, and also it contributes. It contributes to the clubs in which we're based by use of the facilities at off peak times and at shoulder times during days and even weekends times when the facilities are available, and it helps support and to support the sustainability of local clubs.
And you mentioned earlier on that you had the Fijian rugby team there coming in and so on. What's the most unusual group you've had?
We've had a range of interesting experiences. And last week we had the... just last week, actually, we had the pleasure in a single day of welcoming a professional soccer team from Sweden just directly after having the... the altar boy servers from St. Peter's in the Vatican. Mm-hmm. So a combination of...
So altar boys and professional football soccer players. Yeah.
Crack squads at each of their chosen professions.
What does the future hold for this business?
I think for Experience Gaelic Games, always our agenda has been to raise the concept of Gaelic Games on the tourist agenda. We feel that every international visitor coming to our island should have an opportunity to interface in some way with some facet of our Indigenous culture. And we feel the best way to engage with that Indigenous culture is with an understanding of Gaelic Games. Although we're passionate about the idea of physical engagement and participation, and we'd be very much driven by the local buzzwords or concepts that are more prevalent in international tourism now, about authenticity, about interaction, about Indigenous, about participation, and getting away from that historical passive spectating that has been the backbone of a lot of the tourism industry to date. So we see that as growing, and we think there's lots and lots of work for us to do.
Cormac, thank you very much. We wish you all the best.
Cormac.
And that was Dave there. He met up with Cormac O'Donoghue earlier in the week down in Nafina in Moby Road. And a fantastic business idea, and one that's promoting Indigenous Irish games, and tourists really, really enjoying that. Okay, we're moving on now to a regular feature in the programme. This week for Nearby Business on the Road, Brian Green visited two businesses in Merino. He first of all chatted with Thomas in City Cycles there at the corner of the Malahide Road and Merino Mart. Then went around the corner to meet Deirdre in Quack and Dirk, and he chatted to her to see how the business was going there. But first up, it's Thomas in City Cycles.
Nearby Business on the Road and a 31 bus from Sutton Cross to Merino. And just on the start, is this the Malahide Road?
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm with City Cycles. How long are you in business?
25 years.
And you are obviously repairing bikes, selling bikes, all paraphernalia to do with cycling. How is business these days?
It's steady. It's with the mild winters, I suppose, there's a lot of cyclists trying to stay on their bikes. So repairs are steady for the last couple of months. Up to Christmas, a bit slow. Kids don't really get bikes for Christmas now these days, but all the gadgets and stuff like that. So the repairs is mainly what's keeping us going. A couple of sales.
What was the Cycle to Work scheme like for you guys? Is it still in existence?
Yeah, it's still in existence. It's in probably, I think it's sixth or seventh year now. The second year was probably the boom of it, I'd say, but it's pretty leveled off now. A lot of people have done it who are going to do it. A lot of people have done it and haven't used the bikes. We haven't seen people use them. So there's been a good uptake, but I'd say a good 60-70% are not using them.
Not that the people listening to this show are lazy laggards, but if somebody, you know, is hearing about this scheme, what is it in fact? What can people do?
Well, they can spend up to €1,000 on a bike, including accessories. And they can save up to 52% in the value of the sale in their tax. Basically, it's written off in their tax, basically. Yeah. So you can get a good bike up to, and accessory up to €1,000, probably save nearly €500 of that.
Wow. If you want to do that, you should check out. There's probably a website. You can Google it. You're here at Merino. A lot of people are probably travelling in on the cycle paths that are in from Malahide Road and Hoth. Yeah. Are you here in the morning if they have a puncture?
We'd be here. Most people in the mornings want to get where they're going. We don't open till 10 o'clock. Most shops, it's around 10 o'clock. So people that are usually on their bikes in the morning want to get from A to B. So they wouldn't really be wanting to stop in the shops. They want to, or else they might pass us and stop off at the city centre or something like that. More nearer to where they're heading.
If the family were thinking about getting a bike, should they be looking for functional bikes or, you know, mountaining bikes? Or what's popular these days?
Most people are using recreational bikes, commuter bikes. City bikes would be the most popular.
Yeah, explain a city bike to the novice.
City bike would have the larger wheels on them, the 700c wheels. It's a larger wheel. It's like, you know, wouldn't be a big bulky chunky tire. Kind of maybe a 32, 35 mil tire, which means it's going to roll more, very little resistance from them. Gives them a little bit of a breather when they're on the road cycling, so it can be easier to push about.
25 years in business, what was the high point? Have you had any kind of famous cyclists come in?
We've had a lot of popular people, all right, yeah. A few famous known people in Dublin, I suppose, would have been in. I suppose Gay Bourne would be one who liked the cycle, would drop in. Jerry Ryan was a good cyclist, he would come in. A couple of TV3 presenters often drop in, so there's a few coming in and out, yeah. Yeah,
and your own highs in business, like what drives you to come in here on a Monday morning and open up the shutters at 10 o'clock and start another week of business selling bikes, fixing bikes?
Well, I suppose firstly I have to earn a living. That's the first thing. And I suppose it's something I've been doing for so long. It's more a hobby than a job, but I enjoy it. I still enjoy it, so you know, I mean, I still like to come in and work.
I came in and you're fixing, and you'll probably go back to fixing that when I'm finished. You just love what you do.
Oh yeah, I do, yeah. Yeah, as I say, I've been doing it since I was 12, so nearly over 35 years now. So.
And you haven't done, that's the only job you worked at, really?
That's it, yeah. Yeah.
You didn't have to look up any papers or anything, what you were doing?
I've been in most bike shops in Dublin, yeah. I've started most bike shops when I was a teenager, yeah.
Okay, so we're broadcasting out to Merino from Near FM. Have you got a website? Have you got a way people can contact?
CityCyclesD3.com is our website, and you can see most of our range of bikes on City Cycles Facebook page.
Thomas, yeah. City Cycles, thanks very much.
Yeah, you're welcome. Thanks a lot.
Just around the corner from City Cycles on the Malahide Road, we're on to Merino Mart, and at the rear of Merino Mart, there's a little laneway to the side of, is that the bank? beside the bank, down the lane. It's only about 10 metres down, and there's a lovely little shop called Quack and Dirk. I'm with Deirdre, who's the owner-manager.
Yeah, that's me. Hey, nice to meet you.
What are you doing in this place?
Well, it was my dad's old garage. He's a mechanic and he's a garage just around the corner. So he used to use this as a storeroom for tyres and bits and bobs like that. So one summer I cleared it all out and made it into a shop.
And what are you selling?
So I have lovely pieces of vintage clothing and I have new clothes from Paris, from all over the world really. I go to Spain, Italy, get stuff done in Ireland, and I have gorgeous jewellery, clothes, accessories, bags, scarves, everything really that a girl would want.
You source the stuff abroad. That must be the really fun part.
Oh yeah, it's great. And I go away about 3 or 4 times a year. My mum loves coming on the trips as well. And we go around little cities. We look at vintage markets and we go to wholesalers as well. It's mostly wholesalers really we go into and buy new stock.
Is there money in old clothes?
There is, but you have to find the customer for it. You know, it's very specific. So that's why I mix it up. If I was all vintage, I think I'd struggle. So mixing it up with the new pieces is great because that's what people want. It's the look they want. They don't want to go totally old fashioned and dowdy. They want to have bits of new accessories with the vintage dress or the other way around.
How do you know what they want? Do you have an eye for it or do you talk to them? Is it research?
Yeah, it's talking to them. So I work in the shop myself. It's either me or my friend Nicola. So we get to see firsthand what the customer wants. I'm not away on buying trips all the time. So you have to talk to the customer, see what sizing they want. Like, you know, like the last couple of years, they want pockets, they want sleeves, things like that. So we pick up on that when I'm on a buying trip. It makes it so easy then.
10 years. Was it a tough 10 years? Not that the 10 years means you're over or anything, but has it been a tough 10 years?
Oh, no, it's been a dream. My God, no one's asked me that question. No, it's been brilliant. I've absolutely loved every year of it. And every year has been completely different. We've been evolving and changing as well at the same time. So I've really enjoyed it.
And it's growing. Do you measure yourself like each year to say, you know, are things getting better?
Not really. No, maybe I should if I was a better businesswoman. I just kind of go with it. And I know that it's sustainable. It's keeping me going. It's, you know, the customers are enjoying it. And, you know, I have a couple of bits of staff. There are a couple of people working for me as well, which helps. So
you accessorize as well. You have little bracelets and bangles and necklaces and things.
Yeah, just little bits and bobs because people don't necessarily want to come in and spend like, you know, 50 or 60 quid on a dress. They want to come in and get a pair of earrings for 5 or 10 euro, you know, or get a little gift for someone, you know. So it's nice to have the different prices.
What's your highest priced item that you've ever sold?
Oh, it's probably not as expensive as you think it's going to be. I'd say maybe a coat for 150 euro, a raincoat that's lined and it's really cute and it's in at the moment.
Is this the kind of shop you'd like to come to?
Definitely. And that's what I was going for. Every time I bought things or I'm out buying, I'm like, would I wear this or would I pay that for that dress? And if it was a dress that it was like 160 euro, no, I'm not going to pay that for a dress. I'd pay 80 for a dress. So I keep it to that.
What gets you up on Monday morning to come to work?
I suppose the excitement of what, because I'm always unpacking a new box. Every day nearly I'm putting out new items. So it's the newness and the freshness of everything going out. Getting to see my regular customers as well, because I get people in every week and, you know, you get to know people. So it's nice like that.
Do you just rock in off the street or do you have kind of functions and nights and parties or anything to get them in?
To get what?
To get customers in. Like, do you have a kind of a special night?
Yeah. So sometimes about once or twice a year, we do customer evenings where you'd have a bit of Prosecco, strawberries, you know, everyone loves a bit of drink. So that's nice. But we send out a newsletter to get people in. We have special offers and we've special events around Christmas and that. So yeah, you have to keep changing and keep new things coming.
What is the worst thing in 10 years about business? So I asked you the easy one. What's the nice things? What's the worst thing about being in business?
God, I suppose that it never stops. Do you know, my mind is always going. Like, I'm always on social media, even at, like, you know, coming up to midnight, I should be going to bed and I'm checking messages. I'm making sure that I get back to all these customers about sizing and all. So yeah, it does kind of haunt you a little bit like that. But then I do enjoy that part of it as well. But it does, my husband's always like, just get off your phone. I'm always on my phone.
And that's not being able to switch off, and the internet was mentioned there. Is the internet a huge assist to this business?
I wouldn't say huge, but it's getting bigger and bigger. It's definitely helping and it's growing. But I have like a couple, I'd have like 2 packages maybe going out a day, which is pretty good for a small shop like me. So it keeps it tipping along and I'm able to keep the customers that live down the country and abroad going as well, you know.
Where are you going in the next couple of years? Have you any ideas to have another shop or...?
No, people do ask me that. I think I'll just keep it simple. I love it here. I'm going to stay exactly here, exactly the way I am, and just keep evolving and changing my stock. But I want to keep everything the same. I'm a creature of habit.
Brilliant. The very best of luck in business. Thanks for talking to me today, Deirdre.
Thanks very much for having me.
Grange Road, Bohr na Gránsí.
Thanks to Deirdre from Quack Plus Dirk. They're at qplusd.com. That's qplusd.com. And before that, thanks to Thomas from City Cycles. That wraps things up for Merino. If your company would like to be featured on Nearby Business on the Road, do get in touch with us. You can text us now on 087 69 44 500, 087 69 44 500, or on Twitter during the week. You can get us at @nearby_business. Now back to the studio.
And that was Brian Green on the road for Nearby Business. And this week, as he said there, he was down in Merino with two very interesting businesses there, Thomas in City Cycles and Deirdre in Quack and Dirk. Now, there are a lot of people at the moment, you know, looking to improve their lot and maybe get a new job. These days, we all do searching for new jobs online, of course. And we came across five ways that you can stand out to recruiters and thought it would be interesting to share them with you. First up, take pride in your online appearance. According to business and employment social networking site LinkedIn, employees should ensure that their online profiles are updated and sell you as best as possible. This, they say, starts with the language that employees use. And if you consider yourself to be specialised in certain areas, then your online professional profile needs to reflect that. Show a bit of character, they say as well. It's important to be assertive and direct when talking about personal achievements. LinkedIn also recommends that employees should not shy away from adding some personality to their language, though be careful how you do that. They say it is a great way to show your character, but obviously be careful with the language that you use, because that could get you in more hot water than you'd like to. Also, it's about more than words. Rather than just having your CV up there full of text, why not update your profile with presentations, video projects and other work that you take on, and that should help you to stand out from the crowd. They say as well, be active. That's not about running 5K every morning. It's about having a good CV, about being proactive when it comes to networking. And a way to do this online is to follow organisations that are of interest to you or people that you might like to work for. And finally, don't be afraid to voice your own opinion. If you're an expert in tiddlywinks or whatever your expertise is, you know, on the given topic, get up there, publish a post about it on your professional network. So there you go. Five tips to get a new job. You heard it here on Nearby Business. After the break, we have our special Brexit discussion and we'll be joined by former Taoiseach Bertie Ahern. So we'll be back in a couple of moments with that.
Download a podcast and catch up on your listening at near.ie.
Near FM.
Coming up on Thursday, February 22nd at 3 p.m. is the second of our series of dramas based on the works of William Shakespeare. The second play is Ghosts of Priory Hall by Frank O'Connor, based on A Midsummer Night's Dream.
Bulls, pizzles and cod's fatty body. Ah, but it's a hot one. I could barely stay awake.
It's just words, 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 words. They're like water off a duck's back, Danny. Your words are like water to me.
I got 99 problems and they're all called Helen.
You're not the most beautiful creature I have ever seen.
That's Ghosts of Priory Hall, based on A Midsummer Night's Dream, the second of our Shakespeare in Dublin series, this Thursday, February 22nd at 3 p.m. only on Near FM.
Northside Citizens Information Service provides a drop-in information, advice and advocacy service based in the Civic Centre on Bunratty Road. If you have any questions about your rights and entitlements, access to services or need assistance appealing a decision on a claim, our fully trained team of information officers is here to help. We are open 9 to 1 and from 1:30 to 4:30 Monday to Friday. You can call us on 0761 07 81 90 or email us at northside@cityinfo.ie. That's northside@citinfo.ie. Northside Citizens Information Service is funded and supported by the Citizens Information Board.
Teamworks Gym at the Chanel Leisure and Hospitality Venue, home of Parnell's GAA Club. Gymnasium and sports facilities, sauna, steam room and jacuzzi, state-of-the-art fitness equipment. Opening hours, weekdays, 6:30 a.m. to 9 p.m, Saturday and Sunday, 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. Become a full or social member today and enjoy the facilities. Special club and family membership deals available. Special offer, €250 for 1 year, which can be paid quarterly. For further details, phone 848 1283 or call into Parnell's GAA Club, Coolock Village.
Online at near.ie and on air across northeast Dublin. 90.3, this is Near FM.
And you're welcome back to Nearby Business. Don't forget, if you'd like to get involved in the discussion or comment on any of the stories, you can contact the show by text while we're on air to 087 69 44 500. That's 087 69 44 500. You can get us on Twitter as well at @nearby_business, #localbiz. And we're live too on our Facebook page, Nearby Business. Now, for the remainder of the programme, we're going to focus on Brexit. There's been a lot of talk here in Ireland on both sides of the border, across the water in the UK as well, and in Brussels too. What is the most likely outcome of the deliberations and discussions? Who will gain and who will lose out?
OK, why is Britain leaving the European Union? David Cameron, due to pressure from Eurosceptics, including Nigel Farage's UKIP party, were forced effectively to hold a referendum, which was held on the 23rd of June 2016. And that was to decide whether UK should leave or remain in the European Union. We all know what happened, unless you were asleep for the last year and a half. They decided to leave, which was won by 51.9% to 48.1%. The referendum turnout was 72%, nearly 71.8%. And 30 million people voted. Now, the population of Britain is 60 million. So it gives you a little context into that.
Yeah, so that was then, Dave. What's happening now?
Okay, so they voted to leave the European Union. It was scheduled, departure is now scheduled, should I say, for 11 p.m, right down to the actual hour, on Friday, 29th of March 2019. The UK and the EU have provisionally agreed on the three divorce issues, and this was in December, of course, of how much the UK owes to the EU, what happens to Northern Ireland border, and what happens to UK citizens living elsewhere in the EU and EU citizens living in the UK. Talks are now moving on to further relations and a plan for a 2-year transition period to smooth the way to post-Brexit relations, or so it would appear.
A little nod there to Europe, 11 p.m. on the 29th of March. Of course, it'll be midnight in Brussels.
Perhaps, yeah.
Perhaps it will. OK, to set a little bit more context for our discussion that we're going to have with former Taoiseach Bertie Ahern in just a moment, we thought it'd be interesting to put together a recording of diverse views and opinions from the UK and from Brussels. So we've a little piece here that includes contributions from Theresa May, Michel Barnier, Nigel Farage and David Davis.
This is London calling.
Well, why should a multi-millionaire French banker living in London have more rights than anybody here who's British or indeed comes from the rest of the world? You can't have that. You know, either you live by one set of rules or you don't. That's not acceptable.
You don't need to do an impact assessment, a formal impact assessment, to understand that if there is a regulatory hurdle between our producers and a market, that it will have an impact, it will have an effect. The assessment of that effect, I think I've said to you before, is not as straightforward as people imagine. I'm not a fan of economic models because they have all proven wrong. Individual sectoral analyses will not be necessarily informative on that. They're informative in terms of who's vulnerable, but the actual impact assessment, as you term it, is not necessary piece by piece.
On Ireland, we focused on solutions to avoid a hard border. Any solution must be precise, clear and unambiguous.
We
We have at different stages set out and clarified different aspects of the future relationship that we want to have with the European Union. Tomorrow I'll be doing that very clearly in relation to the security partnership. And that again will be a new arrangement. I think that's important because we're all facing the same challenges and threats. And now is not the time for us to reduce cooperation. Now is the time for us to look to see how we can develop on the existing cooperation in a way that's going to be dynamic and agile for the future. Because as the threats evolve, as they grow, as they don't recognise borders, so we need to continue that cooperation and be able to adapt to the threats as they come. So I'll be setting out tomorrow in more detail what I think that security partnership should look like.
First, solving the issues on the island of Ireland through the future relationship. And this future relationship would need to avoid hard border and protect North-South cooperation and the Good Friday Agreement. Once again, ladies and gentlemen, it is important to tell the truth. A UK decision to leave the single market and to leave the customs union would make border checks unavoidable.
What an extraordinary situation. The British Prime Minister has to fly through the middle of the night to go and meet three unelected people who condescendingly say, now, jolly well done, May. You've met every single one of our demands. Thank you very much. We can now move on to the next stage. I mean, the whole thing's humiliating. We've collapsed at every level. And to allow, you know, the European Court of Justice to have jurisdiction over this country for nearly a decade to come is not what people voted for.
We are leaving the European Union. There is no question of a second referendum or going back on that vote. And I think that's important because we gave the decision to the British people. And I believe the people have a right to believe that their politicians will actually respect their decisions when we've asked them to make that decision and to deliver on that.
Okay, Theresa May finishing off our package there, which also featured Nigel Farage, David Davis, Michel Barnier, all giving their little piece on what's going to happen in Brexit. Now, former Taoiseach, leader of Fianna Fáil Party and Drumcondra resident and Dubs fan, Bertie Ahern, joins us live in studio. You're very welcome to Nearby Business and to Near FM, Bertie.
Thank you very much, Dave. Good to be with you again.
Okay, now, we heard a few pieces there, which gives us the update situation on it. It's quite a dynamic subject at the moment. Changing by the day. The vote to leave by the UK, what's going to happen immediately? What's your opinion of what maybe is going to happen now?
Well, I think there are a number of things in the next few weeks, so it keeps on moving and changing. I think the first thing is Monday. Jeremy Corbyn is going to make his first substantial speech on Brexit probably for a year. We'll see what he says. I assume he'll say that you have to honour the referendum result. He's been constant on that. B, he'll have a go at the single market again. He's taken the view all the time that the single market is a bit of an organisation for elites. But hopefully he will say something positive on the customs union. I think he will. Later on in the week, Barnier and his legal team are going to put forward the legal text, and then we'll see how that firms up from what was agreed in the phase one discussions just prior to Christmas. We'll know then whether the issues that Ireland, at least we believe that we won prior to Christmas, I think we did. We'll see what they look like in the legal text. I think that will create a lot of debate, and I reckon by this time next week we'll probably see a lot of hot water flying in all directions. And then thirdly, in March the European Council meeting is on, and that will be the council meeting that will sign off on the the period of the transition period, which would probably be Christmas 2020, which means the UK stay in, act as if they're a full member of the EU with no particular say. They won't even be at the meetings, which is a bit hard, but anyway, that's the way the rules are. And then start what they have been trying to do for ages, is start the discussions around Easter on the trade relationship. So that's the shape of this year. And I reckon we'll be having our Christmas dinner and the trading talks will be still going on.
Yeah, and it looks like then a hard Brexit is on the horizon.
It depends. I hope that we're not let down during next week. I hope that Barnier and the legal team will paint the picture to say that the deal that was done is legally effective, and that will state that you're going to have a customs union or something very close to it on the island of Ireland. Now, that'll have its own. If that happens, I think we'll probably be all quite happy. If it doesn't happen, I think we'll be very upset. But I have to say, everyone in the island of Ireland probably won't be happy with that.
Just on, a lot of people listen to this programme. This is a programme based around the community and for local businesses, people that are self-employed, small businesses. And in the Newtown Estate and in Coolock, this area, there are businesses which transportation companies which bring in product and export product from Ireland across Europe. And a lot of those companies would have to travel through the UK to get to mainland Europe. This would be a nightmare for them.
Will. I mean, I'm afraid there's two elements of it. And there's Brexit affects Northern Ireland and the island of Ireland. I think if everything goes right, that might, I take the optimistic view, I think that might go okay for us. I think that might be fairly good. But if you're an exporter and you're having to go through any of the top two or three ports, then you're going to have checks upon checks. It's going to be far more bureaucratic than it is now. If there's not a customs union, the single market, I don't want to say you can live with it, but it's the customs union is the one that affects it. That's why what Corbyn says will be very effective, because let's be honest about it, if there's an election in the foreseeable future in the UK, which is probably high probability, Corbyn could well be the Prime Minister and his team are in. So if it was a year ago and Corbyn was making this speech, we'd probably all turn over to the Sports Channel, but not now. I think what Corbyn says on Monday will be very important.
And like, okay, outside of, you know, what can we do in our own front garden, our own backyard, effectively as a country, to ease the pain for our citizens and our traders in Ireland?
Well, I think there are a number of things we can do, and I suppose the first thing is that all the surveys at the moment are showing that not enough of our small companies are doing gearing up themselves, Dave, and this is a worry. Enterprise Ireland and other state bodies are there to help, and they have a lot of good schemes. And you know, to your listeners and small business, they really should have a look at those schemes. Things that they need to do to protect employment, things they need to do to help to deal with the new situation. And there's some very good, simple enough literature. It's not complicated stuff that they should say, and I think particularly the employers, they should look at that. But I think we have to make sure that we give assistance to those people, small companies that need it. I think we have to try to help them with the bureaucracy of a new situation. We have to watch our own fiscal policies to make sure that we're not taxing people out of existence who have enough of trouble with the export problems. So there are four or five things that we have to do as a country, as an economy, and they've been well highlighted in several very good reports. Some of them are being looked at. But we have to say this, Dave, that like by October, November, we'll know what the full deal looks like. We're not talking about long term anymore. I mean, you know, summer 2016 is now a long time ago. But Barnier is working to a programme of about Halloween. So, you know, what the trade relationship, if they do succeed in that, that has to be finished. So it has to go to the Parliament, be ratified by the Parliament, come into effect at the end of March 1919. Even though there's a transition period, that doesn't change that date. So, you know, for business people and your listeners and small business people, this is the year to be doing the work, not in 2020. They should not be thinking this is all in the back burner of 2020. That is not the case.
And Bertie, another important business to Ireland is tourism. And, you know, the effect, there's a significant number of people come from the UK into Ireland every year. I mean, there's the inconvenience, I suppose, of the border check and having to go through all that just to pop down the road, perhaps even from Belfast or Newry, but certainly coming across, you know, from the UK. And how what's your view on that? How do you think that's going to practically work?
Well, I don't think it'll work. I think if we have that in the scheme of things in the future, it will be a nightmare. I think it'll will be unworkable. It will do a severe damage. So I'm taking the optimistic view that the island of Ireland will be a customs union of a sort. Now, it might be the old case that it barks like a dog, it looks like a dog, it eats like a dog, but it's actually not called
a
dog.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that might be the ultimate case.
Yeah.
But I don't think we'll get to, if they want to call it something else, grand.
Grand, yeah.
But what we're talking about is that on both sides of the border, and the island of Ireland, that we have the same regulatory system for the whole island. If we don't have that, Pascal Lamy, who is the world expert on this, former head of WTO, the World Trade Organization, former European Commissioner for Trade, he probably is the most qualified person. He spoke in Dublin before Christmas. I went along, and his assessment is that if there's not an agreement that we have a customs union or something similar, call something maybe different, but something similar on the island of Ireland, then you have to have a border. And there's an important point to remember here. Theresa May and her government, or whoever succeeds her, is not the people decide what happens on the border. It's the EU will decide that, because it's the EU deal with a third country. And in this case, the third country is Northern Ireland. Unfortunately, we'd all like to live to a day where it might be otherwise. But for the foreseeable future, the third country will include Northern Ireland. So if we don't have a separate system that's an all-island system, then we've a problem. But I am optimistic from what I'm hearing and what I'm seeing, that, you know, not without a lot of rows, not without a lot of problems, but I hope over the next week or two, or maybe even the week ahead of us, that we will see the legal firmed up, the legal wording firmed up, that we're going to have a customs union on the whole island, and or something near it. And, you know, if that happens, then I think it's a major. It doesn't remove from what Dave was talking about, that are people who are exporting directly to ports in England.
Yeah.
I'm afraid there's no way out of that unless Corbyn changes the rules and says something positive on Monday in the customs union. I think when people are listening to his speech on Monday, the bit they need to listen to is what he says on the customs union.
Do you think he's likely to change his view on that?
I think he might.
Yeah.
I think as you know, the 20 big Japanese business people went in to see Theresa May a few weeks ago, and the Japanese are known for their courtesy and diplomacy, but I think all the accounts are the same, so it must be the truth that they went in and said if there's not a customs union, and if they have to deal with tariffs and all kind of penalties,
VAT,
exporting
the
they said we're out of here. And I gather the same message has been delivered to Corbyn. So if Corbyn doesn't, if hopefully he moves his position, and I think that will be great, and it'll do a lot of good for him too.
Okay, we'll take a short break and we'll be back in just a couple of moments.
You're listening to Nearby Business on 90.3 Near FM. Every Thursday at 6 p.m, the local, national and international business news headlines with a focus on what affects us here in North East Dublin. Regular features on the programme will include the Business Of section, where each week a different industry or industry leader will be here to chat about what makes their business work. The latest too in technology needed to make sure your business remains at the leading edge. HR issues will be discussed, as well as a particular focus on looking at matters from the employer's point of view. Being an entrepreneur can be a lonely pursuit, so there'll be a regular look at what supports are available for business in the local area. And a host of special features as well. Don't forget, if you would like to get involved,
In the discussion or comment on any of the stories, you can text while the show is on the air to 087 69 44 500 or at any time on Twitter at @nearby_business. Near FM's business programme is Nearby Business.
It's Near FM. You're listening to Nearby Business with Declan Ralph and Dave Daly. We're having a special focus on Brexit this evening, and we're joined by former Taoiseach, former leader of Fianna Fáil, Bertie Ahern. And we're chatting about really how Brexit's going to affect us here in Ireland.
Yeah, and some of the, we spoke probably about the things that are going to go wrong or maybe bad things. The positive side of this is companies are probably looking to relocate into a European base, which is probably Dublin. And the all you got to do is look into the centre of Dublin at the moment and the North and South Quays. A lot of building going up there at the moment. So there is a gain for us in the financial services sector, as you say, back office situations. That has to be a benefit to us.
Yeah, there is. And, you know, for North Dublin and the whole development of the port and the finishing out of the whole financial service area along the Quays. I mean, you can see the contracts booming there. Google has spent 35 million on a new site in East Wall Road. But what is happening is there's a lot of the financial services companies, insurance companies, aviation companies in the UK. They're not going to close down lock, stock and barrel and move over here. Don't particularly want that anyway because they have its own problems. But they are moving 10 jobs here, 15 jobs there, 20 there. I've heard of one last week, 115 jobs. That's very good news for young Irish graduates. Some of them who are probably working for these companies in London already. But these are, you know, good, sound, solid jobs. And if you're a finance student in DCU at the moment or UCD, you know, this is good news for you. Yeah. So there is that positive effect. And I think it's important for us to get these jobs in. It'll help the economy. It'll help the hotels. It'll help the bars. It'll help life generally in the city and right throughout the airport region.
Yeah, just to go back to the hard border thing, this whole business has been a gift from God for the unionists, because they've, not only are they putting up a border, but they have closer ties to Britain, and by actually leaving a community where we are all members of, instead of a broader college of interest together, it's kind of polarising the situation to them. What's your opinion on that?
Yeah, listen, a year ago, if we were talking about this, we wouldn't have been talking about the DUP having any sway in Westminster. Theresa May had the election. She had a huge majority. She was safe as a house for another few years. She went into election to win more seats and stabilise her position, and she came out needing the DUP to keep her in business. The DUP now are in a strong position. They have a lot of access in Westminster. They're throwing their weight around. Can't blame them for that, I suppose. They've been in the cold over there for a long time. The difficulty is that the ripple effect is on to the institutions in the north. It appears that they're not as worried about that as they would have been in the past. I think, in fairness to Arlene Foster, I think she wants to see the executive up running again, but there doesn't seem to be the same determination from her own colleagues in Westminster. So, and there is, that's a kickback from Brexit. And, you know, I think the DUP MPs over in England believe that in some way this will all fall into right for them. I disagree with that. I think the EU are going to flex their muscle. I think they're going to honour the agreement made before Christmas. I think they're going to put that into legal effect. I think some unionists won't like that because, simple reason, the whole of Ireland would be dealt with as one place or something close to it. And maybe they would like that, but that should allow the institutions to get up and running. So I think if it doesn't happen, then we're back to what we were talking about earlier, that we have border checks, we've security checks, we might even have tariffs. It'll be a disaster for us, it'll be bad for business, it'll be bad for trade in every way, it'll be bad for tourism, as we were talking about a minute ago. So there's an awful lot riding on the few months ahead.
Just on the breakdown of power sharing, yourself and Tony Blair were involved very, very heavily in the early days of the Good Friday Agreement. Are both governments involved at that level now?
I suppose because the agreement was, you know, we were there from the start, we were there right through and there to the end. The governments now at, you know, Taoiseach's level and Prime Minister levels aren't involved. I mean, they haven't been involved in other than one or two meetings in the last 12 months. Now, Simon Coveney and the new Secretary of State are involved. And, you know, I think over the next number of weeks, it's going to necessitate everybody putting their shoulders wheel to get. We were very close last week. But as I know from previous times, being very close and getting over the line is a hell of a distance. And I think a lot of effort has to be put in between now and Easter to get this back up and running.
And do you think, Bertie, that personality comes into it? I mean, the personalities have changed in Northern Ireland, you know, significantly. We have Gerry Adams gone, Martin McGuinness gone, you know, and even the Secretary of State for Northern Ireland has changed in the last couple of months. You know, people getting to know one another, people getting to understand one another. Is that part of the problem?
It is, yeah. And you know, it's difficult. I'm not saying anything bad about any of the people involved, but they collectively lack a lot of the experience that was there 20 years ago. And I'm not talking about myself, but I was dealing with David Trimble. You could think what you like about David, but, you know, I got on well with him and I worked on him. You had John Hume, you had Seamus Mallon, you had Mo Molan. There were a lot of heavies, and of course you had Ian Paisley, you know, but, yeah. But there were a lot of experienced heavies. I'm saying heavies in the political term. Unfortunately, they might gain that expertise. I don't expect them to have that expertise. Sure. That comes with time and years.
Yeah, yeah.
But there is a deficit on hard political experience as well, right, yeah, across the front. And that, to answer your question, that does create a difficulty.
Must do.
Okay, and just on that point, in relation to what happened in the past, you had a good relationship with Paisley, Ian Paisley, and you reckon he came a long, long way from his original position to get to peace.
He did. You know, when Ian Paisley was a younger man, I was a younger man, you know, you wouldn't mention his name in my household, you could go out the window. But, you know, he did move. And he paid a price for it too. Like, his own church turned him against him. He couldn't have his own funeral in the end, or his family couldn't have his own funeral in the end in his own church, which he established. Yeah, so yeah, he did pay a price, and, you know, that was a hard price for him. And, you know, I acknowledge that. And, you know, well, I totally disagree with him for most of my life and probably most of his life. My family would have been opposed to him, and my party that I led was opposed to him. But he did make substantial jumps to make it. And, you know, the DUP, I think, and Sinn Féin should remember that too, that he was big enough to make those jumps, because sometimes in life you have to compromise.
Bertie Ahern, thank you very much for coming to see us tonight and giving you your wisdom on the subject of Brexit and the Northern Ireland peace talks.
And that is it for this week for Nearby Business. Thanks to all our contributors this evening, and thanks especially to former Taoiseach Bertie Ahern for coming in for our special discussion there on Brexit. We'll both be back at the same time next week. Don't forget, in the meantime, if you have a comment on any of the stories featured today or an idea you'd like to discuss with us, get in touch on Twitter at @nearby_business, #localbusiness. So from me, Declan Ralph.
And me, Dave Daly.
That's it for now. See you soon on the radio.
Bye-bye.
For now. Bye-bye.